You've only got 3 or 4 days to do all of Disney World, so how do you fit it all in? We'll talk about that on this episode 2 of WDW Prep to Go. Hello and welcome to WDW Prep to Go, where we talk Disney World planning, strategy, and ideas for people planning their Disney World trips. I am your host, Shannon Albert, and I am the creator of WDWPrepSchool.com. You can also find me, well, you can find me there, and you can find me all over social media. It includes Pinterest and Twitter and YouTube and Tumblr and my favorite right now, the Facebook page. If you'd like to join us there, it's facebook.com/WDW Prep School. As I mentioned in the intro, we're going to talk about how you fit Disney World, which is a place as big as San Francisco, into 3 or 4 days. It's a challenge, but it can be done. I've actually taken a few short trips this year, and it can definitely be done. I've also taken long trips, and I know that you can fill that time as well and still not get everything done. So we'll talk about how to do that and some strategies for people that just have a few days for their trip. I did want to take a chance to read an email from somebody who had a really good question that I think a lot of people probably have on their mind, especially if they are using the dining plan. And this question comes from Mary. And hello, Mary. Mary says, I am excitedly planning our family trip to Disney World. We're going in December and staying at the Wilderness Lodge, which will be fabulous. That'll be beautiful. I have all of my dining reservations booked, and I'm trying to decide what to pay for out of pocket. Any specific suggestions you have would be great. She goes on to list the 9 dining reservations that she has, but she's only going to be there for 6 nights, which means that she will have 6 table service credits to use. And so I have 2 basic tips for people who are trying to figure out what to pay for out of pocket. And the first tip is to pay for signature meals out of pocket. And what that means is signature meals are meals that cost more than your average restaurant. And so on the dining plan, they require 2 table service credits. And the reason I suggest paying for those out of pocket is that they aren't worth twice as much. So if you consider, this is my rough math, 1 table service credit is worth about $35. So 2 table service credits would be worth $70, and signature meals are rarely worth that much. So in terms of getting the best value for your dining credits, paying for signature meals makes a ton of sense. My second tip is probably obvious, but I need to mention it, is to pay for the least expensive meals out of pocket. Her list of dining reservations included the T-Rex Cafe and Sci-Fi Diner. And both of those places have an average entree price of $15. And that is, you know, not very expensive by Disney standards. And so those would be some good ones to pay for out of pocket. So I hope that that is helpful for people who find themselves in a similar situation. If you want to contribute a question or comment to a future episode, you can call. Mary emailed, and you can do that as well. But you can also call, and that number is 414-WDW-7900, and I'll try to include that on a future episode. So let's dive into the main topic today. And when I was sort of planning today's topic, I was reminded of a thing that happened this summer, which was really fun to watch. And that is, there are 2 guys from a website called Parkeology.com. And these guys have known each other for 20 years, but they only just recently met at Disney World. And they met up for a reason, and that is they wanted to ride all of the Disney World rides in 1 day. And by their count, there are 47 rides as of right now. There will be more in the future as Disney completes more rides and attractions. Well, I shouldn't say attractions because they just did rides for this. No shows or anything like that. And so their challenge was to figure out how to do all 47 in one day. Now, the analytical nerd in me was completely fascinated by this because I just couldn't figure out exactly what their strategy was going to be that would allow them to fit them all in and work around some of the restrictions that were in place. But they did it. They took, I think, 6 park hops throughout the day, and there was a lot of drama, including test track closing down unexpectedly in the afternoon. There was bad weather. There was blood involved. They had some sort of foot injury from running so much, and so it was very dramatic. And so it was fun to follow along with them on Twitter. And the result at the end of the day for them was that bad weather hit with lightning. And so it required Disney to close a couple of rides. And so the last 2 rides in their list, they were unable to ride. So when that happened, they ended up riding 2 other rides in place of those that closed down so they could kind of prove that their timing worked. And so their theory that you could ride all rides at Disney World in one day proved to be true. You can actually do it. But today we're going to talk about spreading those across a few days. But if they can do it in one day, surely we can do it in 3. So I have basically a list of 5 tips I want to go over with you about fitting all of Disney World into 3 days or so. And I know a lot of my advice is very tactical. It's very straight to the point, no fluff. And if you were listening to this away from the computer, don't worry about, you know, memorizing it or taking notes. I always have show notes available. And so at the end of every episode, I give a link where you can go and find all the information that's been mentioned in this episode as kind of a reference later on when you're planning your trip. So let's dive into the list of 5 tips for fitting everything into 3 days. My first tip is to visit during a less busy time. If you are going to Disney World during a less busy time, you have less people to encounter, to stand in line with, to navigate around, to, you know, wait in line for lunch, you know, all of that. The less people there are, the more you can get done. And so you would want to pick a less busy time if your timing is flexible. And the least busy times, I'm going to just list off a few different examples, is that includes all of January except the very first part, which would be part of the holiday season. The first half of February, the last half of August, all of September and October except for Columbus Day week, the first part of November, and the first part of December. All of those times are considered not as busy. And I do want to clarify that not as busy by Disney World standards is still busy. So I think a lot of people think, oh, I'm going during the least busy time, so it's going to be completely walk on. There's not going to be any people anywhere. And that's just not true. At one time, it might have been true that you could show up during, you know, the first week of December and expect the parks to kind of be bare. But the fact is that the parks have gotten busier over the years. So even the least busy time is still busy. It just won't be as bad as other times of the year. So that's my first tip. My second tip is to define your must-see items and accept that you won't do everything. And I would actually tell everyone this because you could go for 10 days and not see everything. So this is essential for everyone. But obviously, if you're only going for a few days, your list has to be narrowed down even more. And so you need to define that list. It might include scratching one of the parks off your list. So, you know, maybe you only go to 3 of the 4 parks instead of all 4. And within those parks, you probably won't see all the attractions. But the point isn't to do everything. The point is to have fun doing the things that you choose to do. So that has to be part of your planning. However, that leads me to tip number 3, which is you could combine Hollywood Studios and Animal Kingdom into the same day. And if you do that, then it's very, very possible that you could do all 4 parks in a 3-day trip. Now, combining Hollywood Studios and Animal Kingdom into the same day could be done in 2 different ways. You could do Hollywood Studios first or Animal Kingdom first, and I can kind of argue points either way because they both have valid arguments to be made. So I have personally done, I started at Hollywood Studios and moved to Animal Kingdom, and the benefit to that is that Hollywood Studios, you can show up at 8:15, They will often open at 8:30 to allow you to ride Toy Story Mania. Then there are three more rides that could potentially have lines later in the day that you'd want to go to next, and that is Rock and Roller Coaster, Tower of Terror, and Star Tours. After those four rides are done, you could it might be around 10 o'clock or so, and the rest of the day, you can kind of just define what you want to do at Hollywood Studios without too much trouble, including shows or other rides or whatever, and then leave and go to Animal Kingdom. Animal Kingdom, after the afternoon parade, doesn't have usually a lot of crowds because people will see the parade and then head out because they've already finished everything. And that's an opportunity for you to show up and do what you want to do while you're there. Now that works, but let's argue the reverse as well. By starting Animal Kingdom, you have two benefits. One is that the animals are more active in the morning usually. I actually didn't believe this for a long time because everybody would always say it, and I thought, it doesn't matter. But we actually did the safaris ride there on our last trip first thing in the morning, and the animals really were active. And so, you know, that's just an anecdotal example, but I am inclined to believe it, particularly during the hottest times of the year. So that's one reason the animals are more active. The second reason is that Animal Kingdom actually closes earlier than all of the other parks. So if you start there, you can leave and then go to Hollywood Studios, which has a much later closing time. And so you'll have a longer day and more hours to fit in everything that you want to do. So that's my third tip, is to combine those two. My fourth tip is to take advantage of the single rider option on where it is offered. And so basically what that means is that a few of the rides have a separate lane. It's separate from the regular line. It's separate from the fast pass line. It's where individuals can get in line and they can ride by themselves because they just sort of fit them in when there's one seat empty. And that allows you to do these rides faster because those lines can be quick and you can get right on. And that, you know, if your family or whoever is in your travel group is okay riding by themselves, then this is a really good way to fit a couple of rides in without a wait. And the rides that offer it, I just realized that they all have abbreviations that are repetitive. EETT and RR. Okay, so Expedition Everest at Animal Kingdom is one. Test Track, which is at Epcot, and Rock and Roller Coaster, which is at Hollywood Studios. And I actually do recommend it for Expedition Everest and Test Track. You can save a lot of time jumping in that line and riding alone. However, Rock and Roller Coaster, the single rider line, for some reason, is long. And you can't really tell how long it is until you're in the line. But a lot of times it's longer, you know, just as long as the regular line. So that doesn't really buy you a lot. So make use of it on Expedition Everest and Test Track if you can. My fifth tip is to get up early and stay late, something you will almost never hear me say. On a typical, like, let's say, week-long trip, you would not want to get up early and stay late because you need to view your trip as a marathon and not a sprint. And you don't want to burn out the first half of your trip and have no energy left for the last part of your, you know, week. But if you're only there for a few days, that advice doesn't apply. You should probably get up early and stay late and just go, 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 and try to fit as much in as you can. After you get home, you can rest and sleep in your own bed. But while you're there, I think you should just go for it, make the most of it. So to recap quickly, my five tips are: number one, visit during a less busy time. Two, define your must-see items and accept that you won't do everything. Three, combine Hollywood Studios and Animal Kingdom into one day. Fourth, make use of the single rider option. Fifth, get up early and stay late. So I hope that is helpful to people who only have a few days to spend at Disney World. Now, I do have a quick tip of the day, and this will be on every episode. It can be something that is emailed in, called in, whatever, and the source could be me. It could be my son, who says he's going to contribute at times. He has lots of good ideas, so I can't wait to hear what he has to say. It also could come from you or from other people who run Disney websites. So if you want to contribute your tip, you can call 414 WDW7900 and leave it there, or email podcast at WDWprepschool.com. Now, today's quick tip comes from Dave at yourfirstvisit.net. And Dave has a tip for people who are considering staying at the Polynesian.
Hey, Shannon. It's Dave from yourfirstvisit.net calling you from my room at Disney's Polynesian Resort with a tip on what building at the Polynesian people might want to ask for if they're booked there. There's 11 room buildings at the Poly, and they're called longhouses, and each of them is named after a island group in the Pacific Islands. The one I recommend to people right now is Tokelau. Tokelau's got three things going for it. It has the largest rooms, along with two other buildings of any at the Polynesian. Tokelau and two other buildings were built after the original set of rooms, and they have about 50 more square feet than the rest. Now, regular Polynesian rooms are huge, but Tokelau and the other three are even bigger. Second thing about Tokelau is that it and those other buildings are the only ones that have either a patio or a balcony on every floor. And then the third thing is the Tokelau is within walking distance of both the Magic Kingdom monorail and the Epcot monorail. That can save you a lot of hassle in terms of transferring monorails if you're on the way to Epcot. There's two other buildings, Shannon, that have those characteristics, but our buddy Steve from TikiManPages.com says those buildings may be in for changes. So for now, if you're looking for a great building at the Polynesian, Tokelau is the way to go.
Thank you, Dave, for calling in with that tip. I couldn't agree more with what he had to say. In fact, I often recommend the Tokelau Longhouse as well. And I will add to what Dave had to say. And I will say, if you request a, if you book a garden view room at the Polynesian and you request the beach end, you can often end up with a partial view of Magic Kingdom and of the water there. So it can be kind of a good bang for the buck type of thing. And as he said, the rooms are bigger and everybody has balconies there. And so it's a good building and good access to the monorails. As he said, you can get to both lines, monorail lines from there. He did also mention a website. I'm not sure how clear it came through on that audio, but he mentioned the Tiki Man Pages. And that is a website dedicated completely to the Polynesian. And it is, it's fantastic resource. They have great tips about room requests and building requests and updates on construction, because there is construction going on at the Polynesian, and you can kind of see which buildings and areas are impacted. That website is TikiManPages.com. That's T-I-K-I-M-A-N Pages, P-A-G-E-S.com. So that's a good resource for people who are considering staying at the Polynesian. I think that's going to wrap up this episode of WDW Prep to Go. For more information, including show notes, you can visit wdwprepschool.com/episode2. Until next time, I will see you on the site.